Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, woo.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 30. I'm Stucky. With me, as always, is Colin Wilson. We actually have a special guest joining us for the first segment of episode 30 in Jordan Majewski. I'm going to pronounce that wrong. I knew I was going to.
What's going on? The third try.
Third time's a charm. What's going on, Colin and Jordan?
I'm fresh off the Royal Rumble, so I'm just as like happy as a kid in a candy store, right?
All right, so Jordan, do you watch WWE?
Not since I was in middle school.
All right, good. We're outnumbering Colin here. All right, mm-hmm. Colin, I'll give you, before we get into some college hoops, what people actually care about, tell us how it went. Did it go as you expected? Did you hit some of your little bets?
Yeah, it went exactly as scripted, right? We said a SmackDown star would win it. That was Shinsuke Nakamura. He had a plus 110 odds. I think the big curveball from a betting standpoint is that Ronda Rousey was offered all over the place. Like, her odds went from 5-1 all the way to minus 300 before the Women's Royal Rumble. And then she didn't even wrestle in the damn thing, which is why you shouldn't bet on WWE anyways. But she ended up showing up at the end and pointing at the sign and trying to make some drama and shit. But she'll be around for WrestleMania, and we'll look forward next month to maybe laying some more odds down on WWE.
Yeah, we did say, I will say that we agreed that each month for the pay-per-view event, just to create some buzz, and a lot of people do watch it, we're going to have Colin kind of lead up a betting guide and preview for it, which should be pretty funny and entertaining. So is that what Ronda Rousey does now? She's just a WWE person?
I guess, you know, she got knocked out twice, and, you know, she still wants to be relevant, so she signed with the WWE. But the problem is these females that wrestle, they are legitimate athletes. They go through years of training through the WWE development system. And wrestling for entertainment in a ring is not the same as, you know, being in the octagon. And it's not the same as if you're a football player, you're able to wrestle. It's a really hard transition. And that's why I think in WrestleMania, they're going to put her in a gimmick match where she doesn't have to really do much except maybe throw one punch. So they're going to have kid gloves on her for a long time.
All right. Well, that's all you get. 90 seconds. we gave you enough time last podcast. Let's get to Jordan. If you aren't familiar with Jordan Majewski, you can follow him on Twitter. By the way, when I first started following you years ago, I didn't realize that it was Jor Cubs Dan for a while. I thought your name was like Jorkup or something. Just throwing that out there. But you can follow him at Jor Cubs Dan. On Twitter and also on Action Network, he writes up fantastic analysis almost every day for the college basketball slate. So, you know, the Super Bowl is coming up. You know, a lot more of your casual fans and bettors are going to shift their focus to college basketball. So we thought it'd be a good week to bring Jordan on to get some of his thoughts. Before I get to some of your thoughts in college basketball, Jordan, do you have a preference or do you care at all about the Super Bowl this Sunday? What are your thoughts there?
Well, I'm a big Indianapolis Colts fan, so basically every year it's anybody but the Patriots. So, I don't have a real strong take on it, but just rooting for the Eagles.
That is my girlfriend is also a Colts fan. That is her exact same take. Anybody but Brady. So good to know. So before we get into some actual competitors and you know, contenders that can compete for the national title, we have to take care of Colin's interest first. Arkansas basketball, you know, they're playing some decent ball. Colin always has talked about, you know, and has asked me before, what is their ceiling? What can they do in March? So what are your general thoughts on Arkansas and what is their ceiling in the tournament?
Well, I think they're a potential Sweet 16 team at best. Like, that's absolute highest ceiling. And that's basically just because they got two great senior guards in Barford and Macon. And, you know, that's just a great asset to have come March. Problem is, a lot of their good wins are just going down the tube right now. You know, the at Georgia, not a good win anymore. Minnesota, not a good win anymore. UConn, that's like kind of a bad win, actually. you know, all they've got really is that Oklahoma win and PK 80. So they don't have a lot of margin for error coming up here. It's because they have so much experience.
So you think this year they could actually, they could actually win away from home? Because that's generally been their problem, right, Colin, that they only can win at home. That's
the story every year, is that Arkansas plays well at Bud Walton Arena, and then they play terrible on the road, which this year they got a win at Georgia, and they got their ass kicked at home against LSU. And actually, you know, maybe Jordan can agree with me, but I thought last year's team that played North Carolina was peaking. And I know that Barford and Macon were juniors then and not seniors like now, but that team that played North Carolina last year, I barely have seen a shade of that team this year when to get it all to come together, and especially our big guy, Gafford. I mean, it just depends on the style of the team we're going to play. I think some teams would really eat us alive.
Yeah. Fair enough.
The funny thing about you mentioning last year's team is that was actually a good road Arkansas team too. Mm-hmm. You know, they won at Tennessee, at A&M, Vandy, at South Carolina. They racked up the road wins, and then now they're back to bad road Arkansas this year. So that's not a very good good omen for March.
Yeah, I know you, Colin, you'll be tuning into them later tonight at Texas A&M. I know they're 5-point dogs, but that would be a big game to get against a really desperate Texas A&M team. But
a Texas A&M team I saw live. I went up to Lawrence this weekend and actually got to see Kansas in play. I was actually really impressed with Newman and Svi, and I really have not been to many other college basketball arenas. But, I mean, Texas A&M, they seemed a little aloof in their play and streaky, and they had a hard time getting off to a good start.
Yeah, as Jordan put it today in the preview that, would you call Billy Kennedy a dinosaur? He basically hasn't adjusted to anything that's going on in the game today.
Right.
So anyway, all right, well, let's move away from Arkansas basketball. I think Sweet 16 is what I would say as well. Colin, is that what you're hoping for, or do you have higher hopes?
That's they make it there, I'm completely happy with that. That, you know, we signed Anderson for another couple of years. We're all very happy to have him, and that we would love that.
Fair enough. One piece to look out for on Action Network later in the week is Jordan's going to go through, you know, all of like the favorites as of now to win each mid-major conference, and then look at, okay, which one of these teams actually has a chance and can match up against, you know, a power conference team in the tournament and can actually make some noise, just to kind of, you know, give a forward look at what will be contained in that piece. I'll give Jordan the floor here to talk about, I don't know, just a couple mid-major teams that you expect to make the tournament and that also can match up well against some of the power conference teams. And additionally, just a few, you know, players in mid-majordom that, you know, many people might not be aware of, and they should keep their eye on as they start to shift their attention to college basketball as March approaches.
Yeah, so I think my mid-major flavor of the month right now is Louisiana Lafayette in the Sun Belt. I think they're not getting a lot of the, mid-majors never get enough pub anyway, but even for mid-majors, they're not getting enough because they're actually defending this year, which has kind of been Bob Marlin's team's issues for a while. They've always had a high level of talent, like Alfred Payton a few years ago was on that team. And this year he's got a high major point guard, Marcus Stroman from South Carolina, and a high major big in Jakinen Gant from Missouri. And this team just looks dominant right now in the Sun Belt. And I think they're going to be a team that's kind of not getting, you know, the FGCU or Bucknell or Vermont pub that a lot of the other top mid-major schools are.
Yeah, and just to add on that, I mean, since you don't really hear about that much, but since mid-November-ish, they opened up the season with a loss at Ole Miss to open the season. Who cares? Then they lost at Wyoming, you know, in the middle of November, or that might have been in a tournament. But since then, the only loss they have, and that was on November 21st. Since then, the only loss they have is at Clemson, when, you know, Clemson still was fully healthy. They just had a perfect month of January. Do you see anyone threatening them to win the belt and keeping them out of the tournament, or do you really see them getting through?
I think they could potentially go undefeated. UTA is kind of a head case, and they don't play. They've already played at UTA, dominated that game. They got the GSU still on the road. Troy isn't the same team they were last year. Georgia State is kind of, come tournament time, a funky matchup just because they play this morphing 1-3-1 matchup zone that puts a lot of pressure on ball handlers. But, yeah, I think that test at Georgia State, I think that's next Thursday, should be their last real test in Sun Belt play.
What where does the Sun Belt have their conference tournament? Because, I mean, I'm looking at the KenPom rankings for Sun Belt teams, and it's, if they don't win the tournament, I mean, the rest of these teams are, you know, sub 100, and it might take their spot, and it would be the only Sun Belt team in.
It's in New Orleans.
Which helps Lafayette.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but my thinking is that if there's two, besides, you know, you mentioned Georgia State, is that you have a team like Troy and UTA who have underperformed. They have a lot of talent. I still don't know what's wrong with Troy. I mean, with Person and Bernardo, they have other issues, but, and Bernardo wasn't healthy all year. And UTA, as you said, is just a mess, although they have so much talent. But can one of those teams say, okay, you know, you see this every once in a while, it's, all right, let's put the season behind us and let me make a run? Or do you think that La Lafayette is just in another class right now and they'll get through?
I think they're in another class, but yeah, UTA's a great team to mention because they have Hervey and Neal, both seniors. You know, both of they've fallen short, you know, the past 2 years in the Sun Belt tournament. And yeah, like you say, you know, it's kind of a this is it. You know, we kind of screwed around all year. Let's finally do this. I think they're actually the most experienced team in the country. They might start five seniors. One of which is Johnny Hamilton, though, who's a new addition, 7-footer from Vautech. But yeah, five seniors, you know, they might just have an attitude all year long that this doesn't matter anyway. Now let's buckle down and win New Orleans.
Yeah, and another team worth mentioning in the Fun Belt is Texas State, who, but by the way, they lost at home to Lafayette by 25 the other night. But before then, you know, they won by 3-1, 6-2, 3-1, just lost at Georgia State by 4. That team plays such good defense that they can just annoy you in a tournament, and they can maybe pull an upset in like a really low scoring game. But Lafayette has to feel good about what they just did against them.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that Danny Caspar defense is no joke. And they essentially did that last year. I think they went all the way to the Sun Belt final.
Yep.
And lost to Troy in a really ugly game. But yeah, they just play up games, and if they get any sort of offense, you know, they'll take it. They also lost their point guard for the year, though, so that makes, you know, a pretty awful offense even worse.
Fair enough. Yeah, so keep your eye out on that piece, the mid-major piece. So that, you know, that's a pretty good coverage of Sun Belt, but we'll look into the other conferences and see, okay, is there a team that actually can match up well with some of these power conference teams? Another piece that Jordan actually worked on and we put out today was his top 20. And I call it the real top 20 because it's not, you know, any of these coaches polls or the AP bullshit that is just like, oh, you're a name, you're in the top 20. And it just seems like no one's actually watching. Now at the top, they generally get it right because it's easy to put the 21 teams at the top. But if you go out and look at Jordan's list on actionnetwork.com or on the app, there's, you know, there's some really distinct differences between, you know, his top 20 and what you'll see out there. And that's really what we're going for. We'll update this weekly, and we want people to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, just like a few years ago, you had a Wichita State who was an 8 seed, but most people said, you know, this is a top 10 team in the country. So, you know, just making you aware of that fact, if you haven't been paying attention to college basketball, or you have and you're just looking for value come tournament time or in the futures market, the top 20 piece, which we'll update weekly, as I said, will be really key to keep your eye on. One of the things, you know, we'll end our time with Jordan here with a fun segment that I thought we'd do is I'm going to go down his top 10 of those 20. And, you know, these are the class of college basketball. And I want, Jordan, you to just give me one team that they wouldn't want to see. Now, you might think that this team, we'll start with Villanova. You think that they're the best team in the country. I don't necessarily disagree, but is there one team that they really wouldn't want to see come March, whether it be, you know, in the third round or in the Final Four?
Any team that uses an efficient motion offense instead of relying on pick and roll, because they are just dominant defensively against pick and roll teams. So that's a team like St. Mary's, I don't think they'd want to see. Purdue would be a tough matchup for them because they can dominate at the rim, where I'm kind of a little hesitant on with Villanova, just because they rely on freshman bigs down there. And Purdue is so good with their off-ball motion when the ball is in the post. And they played a great game last year, Nova and Purdue, but it was so early in the year. So those are the two teams I think that Nova could have some issues with.
Yeah, and especially considering the fact that I watched that entire Villanova-Marquette game. Well, also Villanova doesn't want to see Butler, obviously.
Yeah,
But I watched that entire Villanova-Marquette game, and their defense was lost without Phil Booth. Now, granted, they have time to adjust without him, but even I think Jay Wright even mentioned it at a half, as they were just confused the entire game with what Marquette was doing. So that's something to keep an eye on. I mean, that kid Gillespie, I think his name is going to get a lot more playing time. So I think their defense definitely takes a step back with the loss of Booth. Would you agree?
Definitely.
Okay, cool. So those are two teams to keep an eye on. I hope maybe I have a St. Mary's future from early in the year, so I'm liking the way that they look. But the second team we have here is a team that's, you know, getting a lot of pub lately. They're 20-1, but they just had a win at Cameron for the first time in forever. That's Virginia, and I know you've talked about their historic defense. You know, do you want to talk about just how good their defense has been, and then what team would, you know, they not want to see in March?
Yeah, the defense is, like you said, on a historic pace right now. And people forget that last year, you know, when they talk about Virginia, you know, when they get to March, they flame out. They forget that Isaiah Wilkins was sick last year for the tournament. That's arguably the best individual defender in the country. And he wasn't, I think he played all of 5 minutes in the tournament last year. So, you know, that's kind of a, they have, they underperformed last year, but, you know, if they're healthy going in, you can't really argue with the best defense in the country. And really the only team I see that runs an offense that could really mix up their pack line is Villanova. And that probably wouldn't be, and, you know, they'd be on opposite sides of the bracket. You would, you know, if you projected it now.
So Virginia is legit.
Very legit.
Right? Okay. Yep. Third team, which has won, I believe, they have the longest winning streak in the country, is Purdue. They've won 17 straight. You know, they have a really complete, experienced team. Is there someone that they, you know, matchup-wise don't want to see?
This is a name you're going to hear a lot on my during this segment, St. Mary's. Any team that forces their bigs to guard out in motion is going to give them issues. We've seen Michigan do that with Mo Wagner. So I think a team like St. Mary's could give Purdue some issues.
I'm loving the St. Mary's love. Colin, do you have any futures down for college basketball?
Yeah, I got Xavier. I had the Xavier 100-1 beginning of the year. I took Michigan State earlier in the year. I think I might have got caught up in the Boise State craze, but I'm not sure that. Yeah, I know. I might have got caught up in that back before bowl season started up. So that one I might want to trash. I'm not even sure. I think they're listed as a 12 seed right now. So that's about it. Xavier kind of scares me, as, you know, there's just, you know, again, it's a style of play thing where I think, you know, like even tonight, I think St. John's is going to give them some issues.
Well, Xavier just can't run into Villanova. Jesus, they'll lose by 20. but yeah, I mean, Jordan, that piece that we did preseason for all the futures that we recommended, you'll see these teams all over this top 10, which is a good sign, because I follow most of them and then added a full unit on St. Mary's myself, which Jordan actually has his number 11. So we won't get to him here, but they're obviously, you know, it can cause some havoc with some of the matchup issues that they provide. Fourth team, you actually have Cincinnati as the number 4 team in the country. They're 19-2. Who don't they want to see?
Yeah, I mentioned this in that top 20 piece. Cincinnati is actually playing the second best defense of the KenPom era. So that's pretty incredible. And that gets no recognition, and partly because they haven't really beaten anybody this year. So, but teams that can give them issues, I think, are really good transition offenses. Not necessarily teams that play up tempo, but teams that are really efficient in transition. That's a team like Michigan State, someone that can beat you down the court with anybody, you know, that can grab the rebound, basically. And before that, kind of hybrid pack line defense that Mick Cronin plays can get set in the half court. Otherwise, you're not going to score. And a team, I think, that can, that's maybe that could upset them even before they would play, you know, another high seed like Michigan State, would be a team like East Tennessee State, who has big athletic guards who can push the tempo and has high major athleticism at the right positions.
Yeah, East Tennessee State was up, they blew a 21-point second half lead against Xavier early in the year, but they had Xavier on the ropes at Xavier. They were catching over 20 points. I remember I had them. But yeah, when Jordan mentioned since the KenPom era, that's from what, 2002, 2003? So you're talking about Virginia playing, as of right now, if the season ends today, the best defense in the KenPom era. And Cincinnati is number two. They're a tick ahead of Kentucky's 2014-15 team. You did just mention Sparty, who you have at number five. Who do you have? Who do you think would give Sparty a lot of trouble in March?
We saw them really struggle with big athletic guards like Ohio State has with KBD and Jayshon Tate. So I think a team like Rhode Island would be a really big matchup issue for them. And teams that play good transition defense, a Texas Tech would give them some issues. But Texas Tech is a team I have rated highly as well. So I think their potential trip up would come against a Rhode Island team that's seeded like, you know, a sixth seed or something like that.
Okay. And then in your sixth and seventh spot, you have two names that everyone will recognize, Duke and Kansas. I think from what you've said, you kind of group them in the same clump in that they have a lot of offensive talent, but their defense really struggles. You know, what types of teams? I would imagine, you know, Kansas is going to have trouble as the tournament progresses. They're going to have a lot of trouble defending some teams. And if they run into a team early, you know, you've seen Bill Self duck out early, that gets hot from the outside and they have someone that they can't cover on the wing, you could see Kansas get upset. But do you have any comments on Duke and or Kansas?
That's exactly right. I think both of those teams are going to have trouble with athletic wings, big athletic wings, and a team that could knock either of those off is Nevada. You know, they have the Martin twins, who are both 6'7", and also high major talents, came from North Carolina State. And Jordan Caroline, they're just big across the backcourt, basically. And I think that's an issue for Duke and Kansas.
I love that Nevada team. They're so fun to watch. But, yeah, it's interesting to see how – if you want to know how bad Duke and Kansas, you know, their defenses are this year and how worried Self and Kay are, you see the anguish in Kay's face when they lose this year because he's running zone and he's like, oh, my God, I lost and I just ran a zone. And Kansas went zone for most of the game yesterday yep. against Kansas State. And Kansas State couldn't hit a three, so they stayed in it and it worked. But that's how much, you know – they're concerned on defense is that they're running a lot of zone, which you normally wouldn't see Self and K do.
Yep.
The biggest surprise, I think, on your top 20 list is to, I think, a lot of people would be Tennessee at number 8. You won't even see them on some polls. They're 15-5. So you think they're that good, huh?
Yeah, I love their athleticism in the front court. They're small, but they're extremely active. If you put the ball on the court in the post against them, it's getting stripped. And they're mobile, athletic, teams that have given them or that can give them problems are kind of, smaller, quicker guards. Actually, Collins, Arkansas team gave them major issues. I think, Barford and Macon went for like 60 total points and just basically drove right by them. And I think they still lost in OT though.
Yep.
So a team like Arizona State maybe could give Tennessee some issues.
Okay. And then of the rounding out your top 10, you have Xavier and Texas Tech. Of those three, Tennessee, Xavier, Texas Tech, which one has the best chance, do you think, of making the Final Four? Or is it purely matchup dependent with those teams?
Pretty matchup dependent, but I really like Texas Tech because Chris Beard is a great game planner. And so on the fly game planning is a strength of his. And they have a lot of Zach Smith loss is kind of underrated for them. He is a veteran presence in the front court, but they're just so athletic, one through five, that I think they're going to give a lot of people some issues. And they have, you know, they play like a kind of way more aggressive pack line than Virginia does. They kind of extend out past the line more than Virginia does. So a team, I think they could be ripe. They have the highest ceiling of that little grouping you just said, but they also could be the most prone to a major upset, if that makes sense. Because a team like Loyola Chicago or, again, St. Mary's that can shoot and kind of negate their interior athleticism can give them some issues.
So, yeah, so I would tend to agree with that. I think that, you know, Xavier probably has the player that can take over out of those three teams. And blew it. So if he really just gets hot, he can carry them. But yeah, look out for all three of those teams. Make sure that you check out Jordan. He's doing great work. He just eats, sleeps, and breathes basketball. Before we let you go, Jordan, did you have any questions that you wanted to ask Colin?
No, we covered it all. I was happy to, I hate to admit that I had the Boise future. So just by his disgruntlement, I know that's bad.
It's not right, terrible. I mean, they're decent, you know. They at least have a chance. They're still, you know, potential tournament team, at least, you know. They're not, they haven't played themselves out of March already.
Yeah, so, you never know who's going to peak when the time comes.
Yeah, they have a great player they can rely on. They can get hot. But do you, Jordan, do you have, so there's no college basketball on during the Super Bowl, right? So you have to watch the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Just checking. Yeah. I didn't know if there's something like a practice or something you'd be watching, but yeah, again, follow him. Follow Jordan at Jor Cubs Dan and check all of his work out on Action Network. He does fantastic work. Thanks for joining us, Jordan.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Right, thanks, Jordan.
Yep.
All right, Colin, now that we've covered off a really comprehensive college basketball update and preview, let's get into the big game, Super Bowl. We'll have to mark down what minute we started this because for some of you, we'll let you know. For some of you, don't care at all about college basketball, want to get the Super Bowl preview. We'll let you know when that starts. So, you know, I think that we both said that we liked the Eagles last week. We've seen that line come down. Didn't it? I think it ticked to a 4 today. I'm fatigued. I'm ready to pick back up.
My we got a 4. We got a 4 and 5 dimes. We got a 4 at the Westgate in town, a 4 at stations. Everywhere else pretty much promoting that 4.5. And then the over kind of ticked up a little bit at some of the books going from 48 to 48.5.
Yeah. Where's your head at right now?
I'm still in the thinking. Nothing's changed in the past week. I think the Eagles are going to take a lead. I think the Eagles are going to assert what they want to do in the first half. I fully think that the Patriots are going to go through another first quarter without scoring any points. I think it'll be tied or one score game. They'll be, you know, behind after when it comes to halftime. And I think Foles, the coaching staff, I think everybody on the Eagles is probably going to feel a little pressure once the start of that fourth quarter comes, and that's when Tom's going to be able to do his thing. So I still think I've already hit some props. You know, I know we're going to get into the props, but there's a New England. There's crazy ones out there where you can get like New England by 1 to 3 points or by 4 to 6 points or by 1 to 6 points. I think those are all completely legit, and they're all being listed around 5 to 6 to 1, because I think that's exactly what's going to happen in this game. Is you're going to get a New England comeback in the end. You're probably, depending on what number you get, probably going to get the Eagles cover. But I think 4 is going to be the worst of it because we're starting to see some buyback now on that line.
Yeah, I'm surprised that it hit 4. I assumed, you know, without Gronk being ruled out or anything, that it would hover between 4.5 and 5.5. So I'm surprised. I mean, the thing is that if I like the Eagles, I probably still will bet them. I'm going to be more heavily invested in the props. But the one thing that does concern me that I've been looking into, and I've dug into this game every possible way. I'm exhausted looking into this matchup. I mean, I was even looking into it before last weekend to have a preview ready. So, I mean, I'm going on 2.5 weeks by the time the Super Bowl comes up. But one thing that I dug into this week is, besides all the prop stuff, Prop Joe, but that excites me. But the Eagles haven't had a lot of success against no huddle. And I'm sure that Hoodie has dug into all of this, although we did put out an article looking at Matt Freeman put out an article about how the Patriots haven't had as much success as you would think with extra prep, especially against the spread. They haven't really performed better, which is what you would expect. But If you haven't read that, check that out. But yeah, they struggled against the no huddle. And I think a lot of that is they rely so much on their defensive substitutions, on their defensive line, because they're so deep. So they constantly will rotate out and they'll have fresh defensive linemen. So if you can run an effective no huddle, which Brady can do, that's given the Eagles some trouble this year. So that would give me some pause if New England comes out and, you know, is running even faster than they normally do and is really trying to run a sped up game. That would give me some hesitation about the Eagles, but especially the under. And that would lend itself to the over, because I don't think the Eagles are going to score. The Eagles are going to be able to run the ball in chunks, but that'll give me some pause. Is there anything other angle that you've uncovered or looked at that's really sticking out to you?
Yeah, you kind of mentioned that. I mean, I like a first half under. I like a second half over. I think the game's a little in question. I know we're going to get into the props. I've invested in the game landing squarely on 47 points at 32-1. So I think it's going to be ultra close to the total. But I mean, I think you and I kind of have an agreement on how the flow of the game is going to go and the adjustments that are going to happen in the second half. So at least we'll find out here with our props, because really with a prop, you kind of script the game the way you think it's going to go in your head, and then you react to where you think the value is.
It's like the WWE.
It is. Because we know Goodell has scripted this already.
So how mad are you going to be when Jake Elliott misses an extra point and lands on 46? Because he's missed the box this year. But, all right, let's get into the props, because I think we both like the Patriots to win and the Eagles to cover, and, you know, it's nothing groundbreaking. I covered and wrote about every single matchup you'd want to see, which is where I think pays off in the props. So we're going to have a enormous prop piece coming out. I'm talking cross-sport props. Colin contributed a couple to that, as did I and a bunch of people that work on it for Action Network. You know, the ones that are just like, who's going to have more points, you know, Kyrie Irving points versus, you know, some random receiver's yards. So all of those. Then we're going to have a separate piece, which is 52 props for Super Bowl 52. And then that's just like everyone is contributing their regular props. I think I have six that are going into that. I'll tease a couple of them here. I've been no stranger of saying, give me Aguilar and give me Gronk. I want Aguilar first touchdown, a Gronk over yards, Gronk over catches, Aguilar over catches, Aguilar over yards, but whatever. Aguilar and Gronk, that's where I'll start. I think they have plus matchups. I think both teams will look to exploit those matchups, and I don't think really either team is going to stop it. So I just see the Eagles completing, Foles looking, you know, a lot of underneath routes, getting them confused, their linebackers confused in coverage. And Aguilar's been great all year. He led all slot receivers in touchdowns, and no one of the Eagles can check Gronk. They want to put Malcolm Jenkins, what is he, 5'11", 6 foot. They can't. Mm-hmm. Struggle with tight ends. I think he's going to have a similar game to Kelsey, who had over 100 yards and a touchdown. I'll start there. Where do you want to start for what you're thinking of from a prospect?
I think we can go first TD. I mean, I've already laid my first TD, and it's somebody you know very well. I went ahead with Torrey Smith at 22-1 to catch the first TD. I mean, he had 8 targets against the Vikings. He had a touchdown against – who didn't have a touchdown against the Vikings? But it just feels like, you know, bookend of the career, the old former Ravens there getting a touchdown, and I'm just already picturing Al Michaels calling his name. So I got him 22-1. Did you got anything yet for first TD?
Yeah, see, I like to do – you obviously don't get as much payout, but I like to do first touchdown for that team, because there's nothing I hate more than, you know, if the other team gets the ball and then they score a touchdown and then my guy scores a touchdown on the next drive. I'm willing to pay that discount for that, just being pissed. So I actually have a crazy one. Well, I have Aguilar first touchdown for the Eagles, which I could check to see – plus 850, is that right?
I see 13-1 on 5 dimes, but yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to look to see what it is again. The Aguilar first touchdown for the Eagles, because here's the thing. Here's what I'm thinking. Yes, the Eagles should be able to gash the Patriots in the run game, but the Patriots red zone defense is really good. So I'm thinking that it's going to be a pass. It's going to be from, you know, potentially outside of the red zone. So I was looking receivers. The Patriots do a really good job against tight ends in the red zone. They do a really good job against tight ends in general. So I kind of crossed out Ertz. So I don't hate your Torrey Smith call. I went with Aguilar because I'm really just going heavy on Aguilar this game. So I kind of like that call on you. And on the other side of the ball, for Pat's first touchdown, I actually went with a crazy one. So I don't think you're ever going to be able to guess who I pick, but he's, I think.
He's, can I get one guess?
Yeah, I think he's, all right, yeah, go ahead. It's a crazy one.
Patrick Chung. No, I'm
no,
but Bernard Reedy. There you go. That's my crazy one.
No, it's not, I guess it's not that crazy, but I went heavy on Gronk on like yards and catches, but first touchdown, I went Dwayne Allen.
Yep.
And I can see it. I can see Brady rush them up to the line at the 2 yard line, a little play action with two tight ends in, and then a little, you know, Dwayne Allen is wide open. All the attention on Gronk. I just see it in my head. There's also a risk Gronk is hurt or gets hit. That plays into it. I don't think that he's going to play, but you never know. But I can see the Patriots getting into the red zone, and the Eagles' run defensive line is really strong. So I can see Brady, you know, if they get down to like the two, you know, Brady handing it off on play action and then a little dump over, you know, I just see it. I see Dwayne Allen scoring a touchdown. I don't know if it's going to be the first or not, but I'm taking a stab with Dwayne Allen. Let's go.
I like that. So you might not have seen it, but Five Dimes is also offering a last TD of the game, which I went ahead and this is, I think, the moment of the game that is probably going to be remembered forever because it would be the last TD. And I went ahead and hit Danny Amendola 14-1 because I just think that's probably what the call is going to be to end the game. Did you have any interest in the last TD? I mean, Brady's offered it 110-1, like if maybe there's a sneak to end it.
No, I mean, I don't. I mean, here's the thing is that the Eagles have been fairly strong at slot, but you know, in some cases, you're not going to cover Amendola, and especially down by the goal line. So I don't mind it, but no, I didn't go with last touchdown. Although I'm thinking you have to be crazy to do an Eagle. It just feels the Patriots are going to score the last touchdown, whether or not they're two scores behind or one score. Brady in the fourth, you pretty much just throw out all the Eagles and look for the Patriots. And yeah, I mean, Amendola is as good of a guess as anyone. Now, one of the things I haven't bet an MVP yet. I usually don't, but, you know, I think Brady's favored. What is he, minus 110?
He's minus 110.
Yeah, he's won four, only player ever to win four. Quarterbacks have won 28 of 51, 55% of the MVPs. But there's been some crazy ones. You know that they've mainly been Cowboys. Super Bowl V, the Cowboys linebacker won it. He was the only player ever to win it from the losing team. And then in 1978, I believe, two defensive linemen from the Cowboys won it because the media voted for the whole Cowboys defense. And then the NFL came down and said, no, you can't have a whole defense. And then they couldn't decide. And the last second, they just gave it to two players. Really weird. But there was two defensive linemen. You always can have a weird one, like a Dexter Jackson. But the only there's no value with Brady minus 110. But
there was Larry Brown. There was the Larry Brown Cowboys year against the Steelers where threw TD passes straight to him. Two of them. I'm sorry, two INTs straight to Larry Brown. He won the MVP.
Yep. Yeah. And that's why a good trivia question is which team has the most Super Bowl MVPs? And it's the Cowboys. And the reason that it's, you know, clearly the Cowboys is that they had two in one game, the only time that's ever happened. And they had one when they lost the Super Bowl. It's a great NFL trivia question. But the only thing I can think of here is that I was leaning towards, because I'm already heavy Gronk, is that, like, if Gronk scores the last touchdown, and, like, you know, the fans are going to vote for Gronk, and people want, and maybe they see it, but at the end of the day, if the Patriots win, is everyone like, we got to get Brady as fifth? Or I don't know, because it's 20% fan voting goes into it, and then 80% media and writers. So if the Patriots win, are they just going to give it to Brady unless someone has like a pick six to win it? But the only other player I could really see is if Gronk has a huge day and then he scores two touchdowns or something. But do you have any thoughts on MVP?
I mean, Gronk would have to still be on the field, still be healthy, I guess, to come out and collect that trophy. So no, as far as MVP, I'm going to take a long shot. I haven't picked anybody yet, but yeah, I don't go with the minus 110 favorite. I never do. I would rather lay a money line, you know, I would rather parlay something with the money line on the Pats, which seems to be more, you know, like you said, I mean, it's random. Something could happen in the game and, you know, there'd be a reason for Brady not to get the MVP. So I would rather lay the Pats money line at a little bit more of a price than lay Brady.
I agree. So as far as a crazy prop, I went over some Gronk props. I also like Gronk minus 18.5 over Ertz. Sounds crazy, but I do. I did the Dwayne Allen first touchdown, tons of Aguilar props. Here's a before we get into the craziest one that I did, here's the one that I think I can convince you on if you haven't already played it. Jay Ajayi, longest rush over 14 yards, minus 105. Here's my case. The Eagles led the NFL in, and we went over this last podcast, runs over 10 yards, runs over 20 yards. The Patriots' run defense is horrifying, mainly because their defensive line, you know, it actually has some players that can guard the run, but their linebackers are so bad against the run. Their safeties are really bad against the run. So, you know, you like to talk about all those stats, like the open field rank. And once you get, you know, 5 to 10 yards down the field, the Patriots are even worse again, which is why their rush yards allowed per attempt are so bad. What, a 31st in the NFL. So I think Ajayi's going to break a couple runs. And then also on that same token, if you look back at the Eagles against tight ends, they've given up a ton of big plays to tight ends. So I think Gronk over 25 yards, they've given up a number of plays over 25 yards. So I think Gronk will have a huge catch down the seam, I can see. But Ajayi over 14 yards, I think he breaks one or maybe two. But all you need is one to get home on that bet. What do you think there?
That's an excellent cap. I mean, we use that stat all the time, the second level in the open field ranks, and New England is one of the worst defenses when it comes to defending that. So I think that's a great one. I'll probably have to add that. Do you want to keep it around football or get into the entertainment? I got a couple football ones we can throw out there and see what your opinion is.
Go wherever you want. We can go. All right. We can go anthem, Gatorade color. I know you've done Gatorade analysis.
Yeah, I'll do the football ones and then we'll get into the crazy ones because I've already hit the crazy ones. And as a matter of fact, Friday night I started moving just one tweet and I started moving lines on Five Dimes again. So on Pink's hair. So. All right, so football-wise, I got 33-1 on Philly's defensive and special teams going over 1.5 TDs. I know it's 33-1 is – I'm not even sure there's value in that because the chance of there being one of these happening is, you know, a shoot. But two of these happening is another thing. But, I mean, we may get lucky here. This, you know, Foles may not be able to move the ball, and this may be the way they get their points or maybe they kickstart something. But you know, so we definitely lay some money there. I can see something wacky happen to get Philly some points, and maybe it'll happen twice. One of the lines I didn't understand at all, and I scooped it up at plus 155 on Five Dimes, was a second-half lead change. And that was in plus money, plus 155 for a second-half lead change. Does that seem odd to you? Doesn't it seem like it should be favorited?
Yeah, especially given how we think the game is going to play out and the Patriots – you know, they've in their fourth quarter, they'll come from, you know, if they're 10 down, 13 down, they'll come back and take the lead. That does seem too high. It's funny because when you said I found a crazy one at plus 155, I actually, the last one I was going to say is at plus 155. And it was really dumb that when I bet it because I just see it. I see it. Picture, you know how we do the script? I bet Tom Brady over longest rush over 2 yards plus 155. So the Eagles led the NFL in pressures. They're going to pressure Brady. And I just, there's two ways this can get here, by the way. Sometimes with fourth and two, or third and two, Brady, or second and two, Brady will sneak it if there's no D tackle over the center or he sees he can just sneak by the guard. That can get there. But I just see Brady getting pressured and him slowly just up the middle scrambles for like a 4 yard first down. It just kept playing in my head. And then I was like, you know what? Let me check this. I just see it before I even look at the prop. Let me look at the prop. And I saw, all right, 2 yards. And I saw plus 155. I'm in. So I bet on Tom Brady running over 2 yards, which sounds dumb, but in my WWE scripted head, it's happening.
There you go. There you go. So I like it because, you know, his sneaks, he's like the best sneaker of all time. I mean, 3 yards is nothing. I've also got a couple of Philly first half props. So it's I got a Philly first half. They win and then New England wins in full time. That pays plus 640. Same thing. Philly first quarter. They win. New England doesn't score. That pays 4-1. Granted, remember, New England has never scored in the first quarter of any of their Super Bowls. So I assume maybe that will keep going. That's not a fluke. Besides that, I mean, the rest I have are entertainment. The rest I have are complete entertainment.
All right, well, let's go entertainment. Let's go.
All right, so Friday night I tweeted out that Pink having green hair is at 8-1 is ridiculous. It should be a lot lower than that. And the thinking behind that is, now Pink is from Philly, or she's from outside of Philly, but I mean everybody from outside of Philly. Like if you're from Media or Newtown Square, you say you're from Philly, but you're not. Anyway, so she, you know, she tweeted out a whole bunch of Eagles stuff when they made the Super Bowl, and she gets to sing the anthem. I mean, this is a big thing for her. And I started doing some thinking on it when I started looking at all of her props. I thought, well, she's not going to go out there and wear like a Foles jersey. She's not going to go out there like in a old school jersey. You know, she's not going to be wearing anything Eagles related because this is singing the national anthem. I figure she would take it professionally. And at the same time, I don't think that she's allowed to say anything on the microphone. She just can't, you know, sing the anthem and yell, go Eagles. I mean, that ain't going to, she's not going to go out there and you know, do the bird thing and all that. None of that's going to happen. But what she does have control over, what they can't limit her on, is her hair color, which does change frequently. Now, I think she was at the whole blonde, you know, clear bronzish thing the other night at the Grammys. But, you know, I mean, she could, it takes 15 minutes to dye your hair or something else. Being the big Eagles fan, even if she has just a shade or tips or anything, this is going to get graded as a win. So
are you sure about that? Is Tony going to grade it a win if there's tips?
I'm going to meet Tony in person if it's not. All right. So 8-1 is what I hit. I hit it a few times. I left it alone on Friday night at 7-1. I checked it before the podcast. It's now plus 280. So I doubt it was just me tweeting that out that it got it all the way down to 280. There might be something in that. So if you want to throw something at it, I do that.
All right. Yeah. So Pink, just my feedback on that is I'm not good at the, first of all, I just looked up Pink. She's 38. That makes me feel old. She's from Doylestown. The only thing is that I don't like about this is that, but I do like the case, and there's definitely value. Maybe still plus 280. She could wear a jersey, though, just right. She could just wear an Eagles jersey. But I Googled pink green hair, so nothing's coming up. All the like people with pink and green hair, so I think that's what Google might be thinking I'm trying to do. I don't know if she's ever had green hair before. I always thought Pink had pink hair. Shows how much I know. I thought that's why she was called Pink, but... I do see that there's other pictures of her with regular hair. So, yeah, I think that there's value with pink green hair. That's essentially the prop. All right, I like it.
Yeah, it's what we're doing. We're you know, free Super Bowl party if she does come out with that. So my next one is
Gatorade. You have Gatorade though, because we gotta go. Keep it color. Sorry, go Gatorade next.
All right, so Gatorade, we're definitely not going. The blue came out at ridiculous. I mean, the blue was low. It was extremely low. I went with a no Gatorade bath. I went with I am assuming that the Patriots win this, and I'm going with no Gatorade bath because of the five Super Bowls, three of them have not involved a Gatorade dump. So I am going with no Gatorade, which I believe was 8-1.
So is this any type of, I'm trying to think, is this any type of special Super Bowl for Belichick, right? So like
this is a huge one.
Right? Well, he's been in seven. That's the most.
So he ties for all time.
This is his eighth. I don't think anyone's ever been in more than seven.
Like no
seven
no,
but was the record, but his wins. Okay. So which Super Bowl coach has the most wins? I don't think but I know that.
He's tied with Lombardi right now, and then
Lombardi
there are two
has Lombardi, okay.
Yeah, there's two coaches that have more than him that have six.
But that's if you count before the Super Bowl era.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But, okay, so, that's where I'm getting confused. So then if he wins this, Lombardi actual Super Bowl wins, like, I think he only had three. But let me see. I'll Google it. Jesus. Five of seven. So, well, yeah. So, I guess, yeah. All right. So, here's where the confusion is. Lombardi has the same exact record as Belichick, and as he's won. He led his team to five. Well, now, Lombardi took his team to five championships in seven seasons, but not all of them were Super Bowls, but they're championships. So, I guess it's still a record. So that would be my only, that whole long-winded rambling by me was me trying to get to a rebuttal saying, like, because this is more of a historic one, do they then say we got to do it?
Yeah. Well, it's worth me putting some money down, right?
Oh, I agree with you. So wait, but that's, I didn't know that there has been that many times when there wasn't Gatorade. So I learned something. So I like both of your crazy props so far. What else you got?
All right. So we got Justin Timberlake. The first song that he's going to be coming out to is Filthy. Went through a few of his set pieces about what he's done recently. The album that he's got coming out, and it seems to be that, you know, every year these artists come out, like when you know, Coldplay came out a couple of years ago, they played a mixture of two songs together at the same time, which was hilarious because the books had to grade both as winners. But generally these artists, they want to come out with something that is something, you know, they're their newest stuff. You're not going to get, you know, something from the old school coming out. Usually they end on that kind of stuff and they begin with some of their newest music. JT's been opening things with Filthy. It's a part of his new stuff coming out. So that plus 450, bought on that. Let's see. Besides that, I think that's it. I just had the one song and the hair and, of course our cross sport, but that isn't anything entertainment wise. The Dilly Dilly thing, it's been taken off the board, right? So I don't think we can bet that anymore. I think Five Dimes did re-release that at 18.5, over 18.5. There's an article out there. It's pretty awesome. Oh, there's one more. I had Chris Collinsworth saying pro Football Focus, it's minus 210. That is juicy, but he doesn't own stake in the company. So it benefits him to say it. To me, it's an easy, put down 20 to win 10 bucks. To me, that's just easy. He said it before. He says it in most of the games that he does. I think it's a no-brainer that he's going to say that.
That's really interesting because I've heard him say it before. I have an elite subscription there. But so whenever he heard it, I was like, oh. But I didn't know he had a stake in it. So that makes even more sense why he said it before and why he would say it. So, yeah, that's... That should be an easy cash for whatever small amount you can get down on it. Might as well take advantage. Anything on the... By the way, I'm putting out a Super Bowl betting party games of all the betting party games that I've played and play. That should be coming out tomorrow. We have a contest. It's a free contest. Anyone can join where you just fill it out and, you know, everyone just... It's a bunch of props, but anyone who just enters gets thrown into a drawing to win a 50-inch TV. And then we actually put out our printable prop sheet that you can use at parties. And I helped make that. One of the things we put on there was guess the number of times Trump tweets. If Belichick's, right. I do if like Belichick smiles. Yeah, you got to mix up some sports and entertainment. I think the Trump under, I think that hit last year. I think that is a good bet. I don't know if I want to bet it, but I think that he's like the type of person that's like, oh, everyone wants me to tweet, so I'm not going to tweet. But I don't know.
If I have to say one thing to everybody listening, do not bet on Belichick wearing red. He wore that red hoodie/shirt when he had that heartbreaking loss to the Giants. And I have a feeling that thing got burned. And as a matter of fact, I can't even remember him wearing red ever since. So I know it's 25-1. Don't play it. He's not going to wear red.
Yeah, there's an article that you just mentioned, the Dilly Dilly article about how sports books are how they had to take that down. There's a good article on actionnetwork.com. There's also a article we just put up on about that, what Belichick would wear. So check that out. There's just tons and tons of Super Bowl content going up almost every hour on the site. So that's all I had. Thanks for joining me, Colin. Shout out to Jordan for going through some of the college hoop stuff. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll catch y'all next week. Cheers.
Peace out.
With my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
Rolling down the street, talking in love, sipping on gin and juice.
Laid back.
With my mind on my money and my
now
money on my mind.
Back. I got me some Seagram's gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now this type